Hello and welcome to The Ball Bags, a weekly podcast breaking down all the news from the United Rugby Championship, the NFL, the English Premier League, the NBA, and the wide world of sport. Hello and thank you very much for tuning in to episode 1.17 of The Ball Bags podcast. We promised you 16 episodes, we're going to bring you 18. By the end of the week, so we always give you 112.5%. I think that works out well. A lot to get through this week. It's the last main episode. Obviously, it'll be the Couch Pundit's Guide to the Weekend next on Thursday, Friday night. So I'm going to have fan favourites, player of the week. Have you seen this? But we've got a bit to get through and agree to disagree. So I'll take us first up and I'm going to take us basically a quick look over Bermuda Triangles in sport. Then the bottom feeder athlete is going to take us on a deep dive into the NFL playoff picture, followed by the coach who's going to dip his toe into potentially dangerous look at the noise coming from the Irish women's camp. But first and foremost, gents, how are we? How's the form?
I'm good. I had a fairly heavy weekend now. Hip cancers and that kind of continued right through to the early hours of Sunday morning, so I'm not the most joyous today now, but sure, look, we'll get there.
That's first.
Sounded bleak, didn't it? Yeah, no, I had a good weekend. I spent it over. Okay.
Go on, sorry.
No, go on.
I was just going to say, for season two, we're going to have to be a bit more optimistic on the intros. I think there's been one, like...
Mine are normally fine. It's the other lad that I've taken his mantle today, and I don't mind. I can't apologise for how I feel right now, which is grim.
Yeah, look, I had a great weekend. I went to Liverpool. I got COVID tested. I'm negative. Stay positive, test negative, they say. Just had a little wink and a glance at Stevie G. Strange. I thought the way he came out, addressed the Villa fans, kind of only half gestured towards the cup. But in hindsight, and I was thinking about it after, over a pint, it was kind of like, how many times is Stevie G going to go back to Anfield as Villa manager, and how many times can you bow down to the fucking, bow down to the scouse?
In a week. Gents, who do we have?
Do you want to go first? I don't mind.
John Cooney.
What?
I don't think there's anything more to say to John Cooney. He just signed his contract in France there with that kick in the last few minutes, did he? I think, pretty much. He's not getting a centralised contract from the RFU. He's probably never going to play international rugby again.
He's too old now.
I think he's probably off now.
Yeah, he probably will be. He might stay at Ulster. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with playing provincial rugby and not playing for Ireland.
Yeah, but you go and earn your money while you can. Go and earn your money. Yeah. Play week in, week out. Probably more fanfare if you go play for a Racing or someone like that. They'll have the budget. I think it'd probably suit them down to the ground. I think he'd probably prefer Northern Spain, Southern France, but I think Racing's probably a good show.
I don't know if he goes.
He's a very French scrum half, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he's so good on the ball.
He's a playmaker. Like, he's not your typical. He's very French in his play.
That's very observant of you.
Fair.
Thanks.
what would you about Peter Attlee? Who would you pick?
I think after Tom pretty much put the Bills nearly out of this contention now last night. And it just made me very happy this morning. I'm going with Brady. He's just a clinical man. He's just, in a year, it's just going to kind of be like default MVP. I think you might as well just hand it to him now. I think it's just kind of like everyone else is just falling off the wayside.
Well, unless you give it to a running back and you give it to JT. But we'll see how he goes over the last few weeks of the season. I suppose he's got an opportunity, I think.
He needs, it's going to have to be a big few weeks. He's well able for it, though, so I wouldn't, if there was anyone kind of, you'd be throwing a few quid on to do it. I'd be kind of looking at him.
So as myself, I went for, it's probably a bit, well, maybe not off the wall, but I went for Conor Gallagher of Crystal Palace, 2 goals against Everton. It's probably a poor peak fixture of a weekend to be on a half four of a Super Sunday, but I just thought he's been fantastic this season. And 2 goals, I'd say Chelsea are licking their lips at the prospect of him returning shortly.
I wouldn't. I'd say Chelsea are licking their lips at the price tag they're going to get from. I don't think they have any inkling of any want to play him.
Well, like,
all,
honestly, like, where is he going to start for them? Genuinely.
Would you not think this season, given the talent that's around him versus the talent that's around Mason Mount, that he's potentially better than Mason Mount?
No, I'm not going with that.
No,
I think Mason Mount is criminally overrated.
He seems like such a good lad as well. I don't want to be shitting all over him. Like, no, I like Mount.
But Mount is
good.
Yeah, that's all right. And take him out for points, like, if he's a good lad. But I'm on about, like, if you're looking to win a title, like, does maybe I just see things differently. But I think Conor Gallagher, given the talent that's around him and what he's making work at Palace this season, he's potentially a better footballer than Mason Mount.
Like, he can't really do another loan deal, can he?
Jeez, Chelsea are probably the top loaners in the world.
Yeah, I know, but he is a massive addition to someone's squad because he's English. He's worth more. Like, whatever price you want to put on him, double it, basically, because he's English.
There's definitely a world where he goes for 55 million quid, like. Easy. Maybe 60.
It's the world we live in.
60 is a bit, yeah, look. Yeah. That's another topic, isn't it?
I'd love to. Yeah. I was going to say, does anyone know how long is left in his contract? But no hassle, no point in asking you. Like, no one's going to know.
Jesus Christ. Anyway, good lord. That's tough.
In 2020, he signed a 5-year deal. There you go. So, look, he probably will be on loan next season.
Yeah. Anyway, if you had to pick one?
Gallagher, probably, for what he's done. Gallagher, Cooney, Brady. Gallagher.
Bonvidarelli.
I can just see the way you're looking at me. Go on. Connor can have it this week. Go on, yeah.
Well, to be fair,
I was actually going to give it to John Cooney.
Very seductively. I was like, yeah, go on, go for that. You can have that.
Cooney had balls of steel.
And it's also his first win in Claremont versus.
No, you're right. It is Cooney. Yeah, Cooney wins. We need an Irish. It is Cooney. We haven't had an Irish in a while, have we?
Probably not since Ireland beat New Zealand.
Chalk it down to a bland week of nominees.
I don't know if they're that. Like, we haven't even touched on Formula One, like, but.
They're drivers, not players.
Jesus.
Anyway.
We've just lost the Formula One crowd.
Yeah, well. They're all bandwagoners anyway. Anyway, moving on, in partnership with The Athletic, click the link in the podcast description, get that month free. Agree or disagree, gents? Anyone want to jump in first? Or
now, I don't mind jumping in first and getting this over because it's very, very fresh, but I absolutely, it is a bit of an agree or disagree statement, maybe. If you want me to dip the toe in there and without drowning, you know, it'll be a tough ask, but if you, look, if you want me to jump to the back because it might cause controversy, that's okay too.
I'll jump in. You can go second.
That's okay.
I'll jump in, just think, yeah, because there's new articles flashing up on my phone as we speak. So, I suppose I'm looking at quick look at Bermuda triangles, gents, in sport. So, it's a double-barreled question, so I'll go with the first barrel first. So, Zion's struggles in Louisiana, is there a point where we say it's no longer bad luck, it's a reflection of attitude, or is it organisation dysfunction? We've touched on the dysfunction in the Pelicans, especially with that ownership group also owning the New Orleans Saints. So the current situation at play, obviously, is Zion is, he's really overweight. Don't have the poundage to hand, but I know it was fairly far north of, yeah,
What's that in kilos, bottom feeder?
Divide it roughly by half.
320 by...
I'm just thinking for the European listeners.
Divided by 2.2. Which, Matt's law, he put me on the bad one here now.
145 kilos.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, in the round.
Yeah. Imagine that lad coming down the lane with 145 kilos. Like, good lord.
Apology, Sask. Work away. I was just thinking outside the box. Go on.
No, you're grand. But it's more a fact of the weight is now an issue with his rehab because he's too heavy to fully rehab on his foot. He's come back from foot surgery. The injuries he's amassed are a direct reflection of the freakish X-Men style strength and explosivity he has at that size. And he's always big. But I'm starting to wonder, is the weight issue... Is it just bad luck? Or the injury issues, is it just bad luck? Is the weight now an attitude issue, or is it a symptom of poor management within the organisation?
I think there is a very small window here where it's going to be the point of no return with Zion, especially in New Orleans. Like, look, since the day he blew out the sneaker in the college game, it's always been the hot topic. Zion, you hear the word overweight or, you know, something to do with his weight. That, you know, a fella just built like that shouldn't have, you know, the kind of the vertical jumping and, like, the speed. And he seems to have just this stupid blend of bone structure and, like, kind of like an Olympian athlete as well. And I think part of it is definitely like that he wants out of there, and he's kind of willing to basically kind of at this point jeopardize his career to move. But I think, like, kind of when you see the photos of him, have you seen the photos of him?
I have.
I'm currently going to Google.
Yeah, like, I think, like, now you're kind of going, like, whoever's advising him really should be like, stop.
Will I get better photos if I Google Zion fat or just Zion?
Like, I think if you just Google Zion,
the best picture is the two season launches. There's one from last year's season launch, and you can, like, he's still big, obviously, but you can see muscle definition and serration and stuff like that, versus now, where he looks like what do you call your man, Buck Rogers, that sideline NFL reporter. Yeah, but just like when you look at, say, the disaster, I suppose, that was the maybe Anthony Davis tenure in New Orleans, and how, like, you're talking about someone who's brought to the Olympics before he played in the NBA, versus now Zion. It's potentially too... We can make comments about the attitude, because you would have question marks over Anthony Davis's attitude. But it's potentially two generational talents that could walk out of the organisation.
I don't think Anthony Davis is a generational talent, seen the by the way.
Just by the way, he 110% is generational talent. But talent is the floor, attitude is the ceiling.
Very nice.
But Anthony Davis has all the talent in the world to be the most dominant player in the NBA. He just doesn't have the attitude. He's a two. He's Scottie Pippen.
Yeah, I think it, like, especially how the Lakers have opened up this year. Anyways, we're getting off.
He's soft. He's soft. Like, that's what you...
That's the word we're looking for.
In junior B football, you call him Yella. But
like, surely the Pelicans have to be called in. Like, how has he gotten away with it?
It's Claire's League.
Yeah, keep finding him. Keep taking the money away from me. He should, in the contract, there should be something in there saying, you know, you have to hit these targets. It happens. Do you know what I mean? As you go back to junior B, you sign a contract saying, I'm not going to drink until X. Like, some, you're not even getting paid.
That doesn't happen in junior B football.
Yeah, but whatever, I'm getting fined, like, this.
He's getting paid. He's not sticking to his contract.
He's also getting money, like, everywhere, left, right, and centre too. Like, you know, he's got endorsements as well. Like, he's not
afraid of losing. Yeah, I'd be Wendy's every day,
he's
too.
He's not afraid of losing the money. He's obviously not afraid of it because, like, he's 320 pounds.
Yeah, but what's his playing weight? What should it be? Probably
280 or 290.
280?
Like, maybe 280. I think it was 270 when he was... That was listed
so
in college.
He needs to lose, what, 20 kilos?
He needs to lose a knee.
Like...
To be honest. He needs to lose one bottom feeder person.
Like, 20 kilos is a lot to turn around. It's not easy.
See, and here's the thing with Zion. He's always going to be big. Like, even when he was... at Duke and they were going through March Madness and you're playing basketball every single day, he was still big. Like, he's like I suppose the closest thing we'd have to it here in this country is probably Joe Canning. He always carried that little bit of weight.
You remember the fat kid in school that was really skillful
in all the horn?
That's
he
exactly
played
exactly who Zion is.
Mm.
And you'd be like, geez, your man is great.
I'd say I think it's harsh on Joe Canning, to be fair.
Well, he did always carry a little bit of weight, mate, in all the hurling he played.
Well, he looks
for
great
Pertomna,
now.
For college, for...
He looks smashing now.
Yeah. Looks, Michael Murphy.
Looks great.
Donegal
jumper. no, look, I just think, where does it stop? Like, that I'm not joking, that 20 kilos turn, like, if this is a ploy just to get out of New Orleans, like, it's not working for him. It is, there's only, it's too hard to turn around. That type of way in what he'd have 4 months he'd have to have it done.
Well, look, he's now making it even harder and harder for them to get the compensation that they'd ideally be looking at to get back from him, because like if you were any of those big market teams, like say, like, what, say Boston were in for him, like, I'm not giving up Tatum or Jaylen Brown, as much as I like to criticize them for, you know, the kid that can't stop eating chocolate and threw the prams out of the rattle. You know what I mean? Like,
threw the prams out of the rattle. Can I just say, threw the prams out of the
rattle?
You can have the fella that refers to himself as freedom and a second round draft pick.
I can't. Yeah, like, I can't buy into that now. As good as he is, and I'd say he's still going to be quality at that way, but it's just not sustainable on the body. That's all you worry about is the body, really.
That's...
If you look at the injuries as well, it's definitely meniscus. You can do a meniscus as an athlete, but he's a heavy athlete, so I don't think it's just down to his athleticism that he's done his meniscus. It's 100% down to the weight, building on the top side of the waist, the wrong side of the waist. Like,
it's kind of like a reverse Derrick Rose, who was too powerful for his body.
Yeah,
Zion's probably too heavy for his power.
He's just weird.
An X-Man. But look, I suppose there is a second part to the question. It's probably a bit more in jest and fun. So, obviously, look, I know we didn't really fully get into it, but the Pelicans are a bit of a dysfunctional organization. But what are the ultimate Bermuda Triangles of wasted sporting talent in the entire sporting landscape? And I'll go ahead and get it out there because I know it's coming somewhere down the line. And it's probably Arsenal. When you look at the amount of talent that's come out of the academy over the last 15 years and the talent players shown at the start of their career versus delivery in terms of titles and medals and that type
of
thing.
I actually disagree with you on that. I don't think
really?
It's... Like, explain to me how you worded that question exactly. A Bermuda Triangle of...
It's where talent gets wasted.
So it's not necessarily a talentless place.
Not a talentless place, but a place where... So, like, obviously you're looking at an American example. It's where top-level talent gets drafted and dies. But from a footballing sense, or maybe a more European look at things, it could be where talent is developed, but it doesn't reach its potential there.
I tell you where it's turning into a Bermuda Triangle. Inter Miami.
Really?
I think so. You look at the signings they made, like Matuidi, Higuain, what was that, Lewis Morgan, who's just left him yesterday. Like, big talents went there.
Ah, yeah, but they went for payday. That's you know, that's drumming up the interest.
That's different.
Not, like, and they were all at the end of their careers. I don't know.
Lewis Morgan's not nearly yet. What, is he 24? He should still be playing. He should be in England.
Money talks, though.
Fair. Yeah. Like, there was definitely a period where it was Detroit, Cleveland, and Cincinnati was where there was a guaranteed first-round draft pick for a good decade. And that was the ultimate
Bermuda Triangle. That's still very much those three sides. That's still in play. Like, until kind of the Browns wrap up another, like, 3 to 4 winning seasons, I don't think you could ever say they can't go back there.
No. And look, I know they're still a while away, but the more I see him, Joe Burrow does look like an absolute hit in Cincinnati.
I don't think they're going back for a while, to be honest. I don't care how bad everyone else is around him. He's just going to make it work, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Him and Jamar Chase are like Brady and...
You just need one, though. That's it. Sometimes you just need one. You don't see him piling 60 kegs on, do you?
There's two come to mind. Drew Brees at the Saints. Did that turn into a Bermuda Triangle for him?
No, well, you could say the Chargers, couldn't you? With the whole Drew Brees situation and the old Ryan Leaf fiasco.
I'd always make the argument the Chargers always have talent, and he'd blame it straight away on the physio staff and the lack of direction. To be honest with you, but do you know when you said Drew Brees there, like, the Saints obviously were decent at stockpiling talent as well, but they obviously had a lot of that. Remember, like, the Bounty Gate, the cap issues and stuff that sent them back a few years as well. Like, some of the places, if you look at teams, there has been kind of one guy just masking it up a lot of the time for him as well. And then as soon as he's gone, it turns into chaos for a bit. Like, Andrew Luck came on the Colts, turned that roster around in 1 year at the time, and then sure, by the time he was broken, they only started putting talent around him then. So
but the only thing about that Colts roster is it was coming off Peyton Manning, you know, and I know they didn't even win Super Bowl with Peyton Manning, but they were gunning for titles every year under Manning. Well, not every year, but...
I know, but once he was gone, it was like, it was straight, like, the nosedive, and then back through.
How have we not brought up the Jets?
Goddamn Jets.
Dolphins can be sometimes. A lot of AFC North teams can, or, yeah, AFC North teams can, or AFC East teams, rather, sorry. Outside of obviously
Washington
Patriots.
Are a fine spot for dysfunction right now.
Yeah.
But kind of, it pains me to say it.
I mean, could...
Go on, Sam. Go on, Sass. Go on. I was going to say, as much as it pains me to say, there's a period of time there at Liverpool where it did probably turn into, like, you look at the people that went there, like, Gerrard was obviously there anyway, but you look at Torres going in, Suarez, not really coming away with it, and, like, Torres kind of was a cult hero, but he kind of ended up with nothing.
Yeah.
He flopped there at Chelsea, so was that Liverpool? Well, it's not Liverpool's fault, it's Chelsea's fault, but...
I always kind of thought that Liverpool had too many, like, Andre Varnins, Vladimir Smitsers, and... They'd get good talent, but they just wouldn't. They'd buy a lot of role players who were terrible.
Jonjo Shelvey got it.
It's Spurs. Yeah, he did. And what?
Well, I mean, like, that answers the question, really, doesn't it? Like, midfield anchored down by Jonjo Shelvey, and there's no issues here, lads. Not one. Like,
but I suppose to different.
You laugh at him, but he's
gone.
I was going to say, you laugh at that, but he's playing midfield for the most expensive club in the world right now.
Yeah. Spurs, a lot of talent went there. And didn't even win a cup, like. At least Liverpool won the odd cup.
Yeah, no, Spurs is terrible, mate. Don't get me going, because I'll just be pure bias.
This whole topic can just tank on the whim and just give it out for Spurs.
And another thing. Yeah.
If you're looking at individuals, John Jones as well. I know he's not
just
a team.
Just wasted just wasted talent, like.
Yeah.
But there's loads, like, you could bring up, like, with Freddie Sears at West Ham, like, there's loads of players, like, Stephen Ireland.
Yeah.
Wasted talent, if you want to go closer to home, like, there's loads of, and for one, like, we've done that a few times, though, different kind of reasons for wasted talent, like, it could be on luck, it could be off.
I can't believe Stephen Ireland, still can never get over, like, Stephen Ireland's story, that's just, like, ah, me granny's dead, like.
Can't say that as a high profile individual, but look, we've talked enough, I suppose, about Bermuda Triangles. Who wants to jump on next? Are we going controversy? We're going with the chief of controversy. Let's hit us up.
Okay, so breaking news this evening, we're recording tonight on Monday. So a selection, 60 plus present and past players for the Irish senior rugby team, women's rugby team, have written a letter of, I suppose, of loss of trust in the RFU as the governing body of the sport in Ireland, and it has been addressed to the government, Sport Ireland, and the Minister for Sport, Jack Chambers, and Minister for and Catherine Martin to step in looking for meaningful change. So the group has asked the ministers to meet with the RFU and nail guarantees to the change, so request oversight of the ongoing reviews, which I always thought was funny anyway that the reviews weren't released to the public. For anyone that doesn't know or isn't sure of the reviews that are going on at the moment or have finished, one is into, I suppose, the abysmal non-qualification for the Women's Rugby World Cup, and the other is a general structural look at grassroots rugby all the way up to high-performance women's rugby at the top. I suppose the ministers have replied to the players to let them know that they've sought a meeting with the RFU this evening to discuss the issues raised, and have also requested that Sport Ireland will engage with the players. Now, they say the letter is considered in the utmost seriousness, and that's from a Sport Ireland and a government side of things. However, the RFU have come out to say how deeply disappointed they are, and I suppose how I believe there was a statement of how incorrect and possibly unprofessional they felt that the letter was, given who was involved. I think they probably believe there's a third party involved as well. So it's rocky waters. The players kind of, they reflect in the letter on 2014 when they finished fourth in the world, when they were ranked, fourth in the world, then going to the World Cup, which I think in 2017, which ended in them coming eighth and crashing out in the pool stages, and then obviously not qualifying for the World Cup 2021, which is obviously we played in 2022 now. And then the sevens team's failure to qualify for the Olympics as well. So there's a lot of actual targets they had set out in the last plan when David Nusafora came in that they had aimed to achieve, which obviously they haven't achieved any of them. On top of this, obviously we had the whole instance with the provincial tournament in Donnybrook where tents were used for changing rooms and all that sort of stuff. No great detail in that, but I suppose it has added to the displeasure and the distrust of the players in the RFU. I suppose the strange thing, not a strange thing, but what's so powerful about the letter is that if you look at the signatories, like, there's players that have just come in the last squad, very, very young players, and there's also players that have just retired after the last squad. So it is quite a large span of players. And I suppose ultimately what they're looking for is transparency, number one, support, number two, I suppose. And just result, like, as far as I'm aware, the players are also not getting to review this review, which is, I find, very, very strange. They're not really getting to find the conclusions from it. So they're looking for the right structures, processes, and support, basically, from whoever they can get. And then just look, there's big names there: Lynn Cantwell, Seni Nuopo. You know, like, it's very powerful. Now, the flip side of this is, how much can we put on the RFU that, you know, blame on them, and how much is possibly the players' shortcomings? That's what I would like to know, and we're not ever going to find that out if we don't see reviews and reports, I feel. What's your thoughts? I know it's obviously fresh in the minds, but has anything jumped out off the page at you?
There's a lot of things that aren't the RFU's fault that they're kind of been attacked for and have kind of been used as kind of batons to beat them with. So the key thing is, unfortunately, and look, this is probably the whole importance of the 20x20 program for highlighting women's sports, that unfortunately fell in the worst possible year ever. But so where the RFU gets funding for women's sports is effectively through the Olympic cycle. So there has to be an increased focus on the women's sevens because the 15s don't go to the Olympics.
Yeah.
That's kind of a huge source of concern. The Irish women's sevens would be treated as kind of almost professional athletes, whereas the Irish 15 side are amateur athletes.
Yeah.
And the whole issue with Donnybrook, it was a bad look. There's no escaping that. There's no getting away from that. But unfortunately, because they were amateur, they weren't deemed elite at the time, and as per government restrictions at the time, they couldn't access the change rooms. So there was nothing the RFU could do. Should they have located it beside a skip? Absolutely not. But they couldn't use the change rooms at the time. So now look, there's a lot of information in that letter. 62 signees is a huge number. Something does need to be addressed. I do kind of tend to sway to the kind of way of thinking that if there's enough people complaining about something, there probably is an issue with it. It mightn't be as bad as they're saying, because they could be. I think the phrase used in the letter was multiple cycles of substandard commitment from the union, which is an egregious kind of accusation to throw out at anyone, because That's effectively like saying decades of neglect. I suppose I'm rambling a bit here without actually providing much context, but I think there's issues with the women's program. I'm not sure just how much of that falls in the RFU, but it's like a lot of places. Like, if your favourite pub won't let you in now because you don't have a COVID passport, you'll scream at the manager on the door saying, "I'm coming here all my life," but it's not the manager, it's the governance from the way up top. It's the government protocols that they have to abide by to stay in business. So,
are you suggesting we go on a vendetta against the government?
No, I'm not at all. But I'm just saying sometimes the people who get in the neck aren't always the people. They're kind of working within the parameters that they set.
I think the IRFU, I'm just reflecting that third party is the word I use, but outside interference in the letter, and it's not a responsible approach are the two standout statements from the IRFU's response.
Someone explain that to me in Tickman terms, because I haven't the clue.
What? Effectively, I suppose what they're saying is the players have sought third party assistance in this, and the IRFU are obviously not happy with who they're dealing with or how they're going about it, I suppose. Would that be the best, fairest assumption, Sass?
Fair.
Whether that, I don't know if it's a, you know, some sort of agency or what they're looking at, but they're like, it's a tough one. Like from the outside looking in, I would have said that out of all the women's sports going on now in the country, obviously we had seen the hockey players do really, really well. I would have said prior to COVID, maybe 2018, 2019, I thought we were doing really well with the rugby. I thought the last little while it had been generating crowds, television, all that sort of stuff. We had our successful Six Nations. But I just don't know what went so wrong.
Yeah, it's hard to know. But like, obviously, we're not the players involved. And yeah, look, I do tend to subscribe to the fact that if someone's complaining, there probably is an issue. It may not be as big as they're saying, but you know yourself, when you're in a situation that's not good, you get frustrated and everything is an issue then.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Whereas there probably is some issues, and COVID obviously hasn't helped. The fact that it wasn't classed as an elite level sport was a real kicker. The international was, but the provincial level wasn't, and that's the issue in Donnybrook. It was international players playing for the provincial sides, but it wasn't deemed as elite. Yeah, look, I'm sure it will be resolved. I'm sure we'll probably get to a stage where we will probably have a better women's program as a result of it. To be slightly optimistic.
That's what I just don't. I know, like, I thought we would have had one of the better ones. I thought maybe some of the players maybe coming to an end of a cycle. Obviously, we've seen the introduction of young, pretty young players. Some of the players, I think we were probably missing maybe 5 to 10 years worth of players in there, if that makes sense. Like, there's a biggish gap between the influential players. But this is going to make them take a massive step back, I would have thought. I suppose the big problem is, if you remember the use of sevens players in the 15s, or vice versa, whatever way you want to say it, the use of 15s players in sevens obviously can't help. What you've just said obviously makes a big difference as well, in that the sevens team have to be viewed as, you know, a professional side ultimately, whereas the 15s still have their day jobs to go to, I suppose. Maybe that causes a little bit of internal stuff, and you're just trying to put 2 and 2+ together, which is actually a dangerous thing to do. But,
and you know what, they're probably looking at the men's structure, which men's players, sevens is a short shelf life, so men's players will play sevens, will go on the World Series to get a contract, albeit at a lower level in 15s. So if I get on the World Series, I'll at least get a contract in the Pro D2, or at least, do you know what I mean? Because it's such a short window, it's used to get that professional contract, which isn't there for women's sport at present.
It's very, like, the way the men's game professionally set up here is a very envious thing, in fairness. Like, they are, like...
Around the world,
across the board for rugby, like, you know, they're not going spending money beyond their means. For majority of time, they're able to retain the players that they want to retain as well. You never have an exodus of male players leaving here. You kind of look at them and you'd be feeling bad that they end up outside the skip. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's something a lot of people that watch rugby and look at rugby will see, that like that the men's game has so much here that they can't even get a reasonable little bit of what they deem is support.
Maybe it was held on for too long. Maybe this, they've just released this at the wrong time, or gone about it at the wrong time. Like, you would have thought, if you remember, the women's head coach's job was advertised as a part-time role back in 2019. Then we obviously had the Energia Park dressing room fiasco. Maybe it's just led to, like, probably should have gone with something like this then. That should have been the straw that broke the camel's back. But now it's actually turned out that it's the review or report, whatever you want to call it, which is very strange anyway, that's not been released to the players or internally to the stakeholders, but like whatever about the public. But it seems that, you know, I thought they should be able to review that.
If it's not
being
released, that just doesn't look anyway good. It can't possibly be good if they're not willing to release it. Like, there is no other, like, if they thought now they could just release that and it would be grand, then they would.
Also, if they're not releasing it, who does see it? Who are the people that are gonna, you know, help make the changes? Like, who is seeing it so that we can go, okay, well, that's a problem, let's fix it? That's another thing
chat to them individually now, one by one, like, as player reviews and stuff, and discuss what actually went on with them to that degree. I don't know. Like, they can't not do, they have a report and then they're not going to do anything with it. Like, why bother then?
Look, I think a lot of that could change. Obviously, Jack Chambers, Minister Martin, they've requested an emergency meeting with the RFU on the back of that letter that was just reported on OTB there about 7 o'clock. So that's the situation at the moment, but by the time this even gets there, by the time we even finish up, the situation could have changed drastically.
They've also just got 19 million off the taxpayer.
Well, I mean, there's
so surely we're justified in looking for a report, one would assume.
Lobbying it now, are you?
Yeah, I'm loving it. Get the petition out, Sass. It's on our socials.
We'd be lucky if we got 6.2 signatures on that. Anyway, I suppose to round that off, I hope it's the spark that lights the fire to get the women's program to where it needs to be, and on a whole, just women's sport in general in this country and wider. think that's fairly safe to say. But like, just on that thing you were saying about men's rugby, would be envious. Like, men's rugby in this country is probably the envy of every sport in this country. Like, if you look at League of Ireland footballers looking at the provincial setup, inter-county footballers, no matter what county they play for, no matter how much BIK they're getting playing with Dublin or Mayo or Kerry, looking at the provincial boys with Leinster, Ulster, Connacht and Munster, they probably are the envy of every professional sports person in this country in terms of what they're getting.
And the stature, I suppose, of, yeah, like, obviously they're playing international tests, like, are at the top of the sport.
I know I've put the knife in the back about the IRFU and stuff like that and Irish rugby, but I'm going to twist it just before we move on. Joe Schmidt today obviously reports that he's joining the All Blacks backroom team as a selector, which is just twisting that knife a little bit more. So his first game, I believe, will be against Ireland.
When is that, next summer?
So,
yeah. Well, a lot could change too as well. I think it's calls for heads and stuff. things are after that November internationals, especially whatever about us, the kind of, we were earmarked as kind of a key test, believe it or not, but the performance against the French was particularly difficult to accept as a Kiwi, mate. Just think it wasn't good enough, mate.
French are a different level though. They play champagne rugby,
champagne from the pond on the weekend.
But look,
for the scoring corner, oh,
that man is a different level. But look, we've rambled on, we've done Bermuda Triangles, we've done women's sport. Next up, it's a deep dive into the NFL playoff picture. With
just before I start here, this is our second last episode.
It's the last full episode, but it's the second.
So this
last
is the last chance these people get to devour this NFL stuff for many weeks. So yeah, hit us up. We're just going to look at, if the playoffs ended today, do any of you know where the standings are currently? Any?
I have a rough idea, but detail it for the listeners who are just pure auditory based.
So the AFC currently is New England at 1-9-4. Shocker.
Well, it is based on last season.
No, but you can never rule them out for too long, really, can you? Like, how long do you think they were going to be oppressed for?
Well, they were oppressed a long time before Bill and Tom, so there was question marks.
Well, yeah, I suppose. And then we've got the Titans at the 2 seed. With the Chiefs at number 3, they're both tied at 9-4, and so are New England actually as well. Baltimore are number 4, 8-5, and then the bottom of the bracket, the 3 wild cards are the Chargers, the Indianapolis Colts, and the Bills, and there's only a game separating them as well. So Buffalo and Indy are 7-6, Chargers are 8-5. That's a bit of a logjam, isn't it? As it stands.
That's a colossal logjam. I'll tell you one thing. That Irish fans need to really pay attention if you're looking at the AFC. We've Thursday night a potential cracker in the Chargers versus the Chiefs. Probably the best Thursday night fixture of the game, coming after the best Monday night fixture of the season this week. But we've Saturday night NFL action this week. So the Browns are playing the Raiders at 9:30 on Saturday evening, and then into Sunday, the wee hours of Sunday morning, the Indianapolis Colts and the New England Patriots is a very interesting matchup.
Looking ahead on those week 15 games, Bengals and Broncos as well, right? Tennessee and Pittsburgh. There's actually only 3 teams at or out of the playoff running right now in the AFC. Like, anyone from Miami up legitimately could grab the 7 seed. like, no one is good, but what, like, I'm all over that, like, just from a viewing point like that. I can't remember the last time that was quite bogged up like that. I genuinely can't, like, off the top of my head. Now, I know the chances of a couple of the sides separating themselves as well over the last few weeks is likely. But, I mean, if we got that down to week 18 and it was everyone was kind of within a game and there wasn't, like, any seed locked up, that could probably be, like, the best regular season finale in quite a while. So...
True.
Moving on to the NFC, there's actually a bit more kind of, I don't know, spitting distance with this one. As it currently stands, the Cardinals are the number one seed. They're 10-2, followed by Green Bay and Tampa, who are both at 10-3. Dallas is the fourth seed at 9-4. The Rams are the fifth seed at 8-4. The sixth seed is San Francisco, 7-6. And the seventh seed, which you lads will be happy to know because it means that Philly are within spitting distance of this one as well, is the Washington football team at 6-7.
Well, we're also 6-7.
There's obviously a tiebreaker in there somewhere.
Yeah, we lost them. I think so. Look, I suppose after tonight, that could be a three-way tie on 10-3. Cardinals obviously playing the Rams.
I did say that, like, I genuinely think that Rams Arizona game is the one seed will come from that. If the Rams win that game, where are we, Monday? Rams win that game tonight, I can see them pushing on, and then just as easily they lose that game and it's going to be a bit of a collapse and they'll probably end up finishing 6th or 7th.
Yeah, it's not a terrifically difficult run in. Like, obviously it's a lot of divisional matchups. They've got the Cardinals tonight, then they've got the Seahawks, advanced them over the Seahawks, then they've Minnesota, advanced them over Minnesota. I know Minnesota were trying to make a push for the NFC North. And then it's Baltimore, which is probably the toughest of the lot, and then San Francisco again. But I just, that three game stretch, I kind of have worries of. I know obviously they bet the Jags last game, but the three back to back losses to the Titans, the 49ers and Packers still doesn't sit right with me. I just worry that it's,
I don't think, like, even just looking at the teams sitting at 6-7 in the NFC, like, Philly are there, Minnesota are there, New Orleans are there, and so is Atlanta. I can't see anyone, like if they're all within a game of each other, I would just kind of think the best team with the best quarterback out of the bunch will probably get it, and I'd lean towards Minnesota in that case.
Yeah, look, we'll see. Like, there's also an additional playoff spot, isn't it, this year, so I would say New Orleans are done. Like, they're of a 6-7 record, but they're 4 losses in the last 5 games.
Do you think Matt Ryan can make one more?
To beat the Jets in the weekend.
Pop of the playoff seed here. I don't like them either. I'm kind of like Minnesota. If Minnesota don't get the 7th seed there now, I think Zimmer is definitely going to get the boot. I think they're criminally underachieving, yep. Kind of, with, they generally have good players and just they can't get it right.
They're obviously they're always well structured on defense. They've arguably, I know he's kind of had a few injuries this year, but if Dalvin Cook, they've a top 3 running back in the league. And in Thielen and Justin Jefferson, they've probably got one of the best 1-2 combos in the NFC.
Why so, 6-7?
Yeah. Yeah. Is it you play in a dome?
Yeah, it's just Aaron, yeah, I suppose you've gone play Mr. Rogers twice a year as well, which is obviously never good for your psyche.
Yeah, but
I genuinely, I don't Yeah, sometimes looking at them, I'm just kind of wondering how they're not really giving this.
Well, they lost to the Lions.
It's, yeah, but like so. If any of the years for you to be good, this is the year you be good now, and you might get away with it just because it's so wide open. So who do you like out of that?
Philly.
Give me one from the AFC and give me one from the NFC.
I've always said the Colts. I know they're way back, but I just think there's enough talent in that roster for them to go on a run. Like, it's a very good defense. Let's get that first and foremost. They have a good O-line with a good run game. And then outside of that, you've got good receivers. Like, Michael Pittman is probably one of the more criminally underrated wide receivers in the league.
Like, he's a good player.
But it... And if Frank Reich can just turn around to Carson Wentz and say, look, I know you want to play hero ball, and I know you're a head banger, but you've got arguably... Well, you have statistically the best running back in the league. Just ride him out. And then... They've got tight ends as well. Like, they've Jack Doyle, who's... It's good production, man.
I can't see a world that they make a run if he is not playing his best, though. I don't think they're going to get away with just riding out Jonathan Taylor. And Carson Wells gets to kind of sit as in the side cart. I think he'll have, like, shown a few flashes, but, like, in an actual, like... They get a wild card spot and they have to go all the way through and they have to run the gauntlet. Like, no.
But hold on a minute, you're missing one key thing. They're two games back from the Tennessee Titans. Tennessee Titans are bet up.
They just have to hold off, though. Do you think like Indy can feasibly overtake that, make that up?
Yeah, like the four games left. They've New England and they've Arizona, which looks a tough stretch. But in the last two games are Jacksonville and the Raiders, who both would have nothing left to play for, I would feel, at that stage.
Raiders are still very much in the hunt as well, though.
Yeah, but I think...
Now, having said that, they're also in what we both consider probably the strongest division in football this year as well. So...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What about you, coach? Who do you like?
Especially quiet there.
I fell asleep there for the last 15 minutes, mate. Sorry. Yeah. No.
Just give me two.
Yeah. In general.
Yeah.
For the Super Bowl. Well, the Buccaneers have to do it, don't they? They have to go back.
Like, that's one. Who's the other one?
I really want an LA team to be there, but it's not gonna be, is it really? Like,
go on, all LA final in SoFi.
Yeah, you could go all LA final. That'd be nuts, actually, wouldn't it?
Well, would it really? Like, no one in LA sports the Chargers. Everyone in LA sports the Raiders.
It's only a matter of time though before they buy into the. The big gun Herb.
Like, it would it be?
Well, they didn't buy into the big gun Kawhi, did they?
Buccaneers Patriots.
Oh. Okay.
Oh yeah, he's looking for the fairy tale one.
I'm not looking for fairy tale. I'd like Mac Jones. I've come around to Mac Jones. To be honest with you, who would I actually like to be there? Would be probably, I'd probably prefer the Bills to be there, but it's probably a little bit unrealistic because they've lost two. So.
Do you want to know my wild pick for? The end of the season running.
I feel like you're going to be really wild. Like the.
No, not really at all. I see the Dolphins finishing ahead of the Bills this season.
In one of the spots?
The one game.
For the 7th seed?
Potentially. They're on a 5-game win streak.
I was going to say, they're just
one game back from the Buffalo Bills.
How good would Miami look right now if Herbert was playing for them? With Brian Flores? Genuinely, I think they did
pretty good now. Now the only thing is, Chargers have a phenomenal roster.
Yeah, I still think they're a bit away. I genuinely don't think it'll be this year. Like, I got ready to watch that game against the Giants last night, and I was like, chalk it up. That's one that I know I'm going to be upset about in the morning. And they won, and I was like, oh, this is different. Do you know?
Yeah, but, like, I mean, it's just the Chargers will let you down pretty hard.
Has OBJ been getting more minutes?
Minutes? Probably not more minutes, but more touches, definitely.
Snaps. We're on snaps.
Reps, snaps. Yeah, that one.
But I know, but I mean, like targets. Like, he's been getting more targets.
He'll make his. Well, they're hoping he'll make his impact in these business games. Like, tonight would be a good start for him if he could really kick off against Arizona. I can't remember who I actually had
Vance Jefferson.
Opening picks at the start of the year.
Yeah, you probably didn't listen to it either. So.
Well, the Rams definitely.
I think I had the Rams or the Bucks and. Either Kansas City or Buffalo from the AFC.
Yeah, I think I'd actually gone Colts. Believe it or not,
go Colts, yeah, because that was outrageous
didn't
at the time.
But
it seemed a bit far fetched at the time, didn't it?
And it seemed more far fetched at different points of the season.
So I'm gonna stick with the Bucks and.
The coach looks like he's in the back of the car.
Yeah, I'm gonna go KC.
His mom is just gone. We've got McDonald's at home.
Yeah, I'm going with that. That's my end of the year picks. Bucks and the Chiefs.
Oh, repeat of last year's. No, I like the coaches. To be fair, I do like the New England Patriots. Bucks matchup. I'd love to see Bill and Tom battle it out in the Super Bowl. I think it would. It'd be the storylines that will come out of that would be, oh look, it's not going to be Philly this season.
I'd love that to happen, right? And I know the quarterbacks aren't at the pitch at the same time, but I'd love Brady to be on the ground looking up and giving it the Sexton over O'Gara pose with Mac Jones just looking down at him. That would be epic.
Well, Tom was looking to throw down last night. I don't know if you've seen that. He was looking to throw into the mixer. He was pushing and shoving against the Buffalo. Did you see that? No.
Oh, lads, he's just
Tom. Yeah, yeah, he was. And then he cracked off a 12-yard run.
He's too good. There's no way he's let Mac Jones beat him. Yeah. Imagine a rookie beating Tom Brady in the Super Bowl.
No, but he might. He might lose to Bill.
I don't think he's losing to Bill in the Super Bowl.
If you had to pick a man like a head coach in the NFL. And you said to him, I need you to go out there and I need you to coach a game. No matter what the situation, you need to win or I lose my family. You'd back it on Bill. And if you want like a summation of that, it's that victory against the Buffalo Bills. He's just looked at the game and he's gone, yeah, he's going to throw three times. But we're going to win.
But like,
it's not going to be pretty, but we're going
to
win.
I don't see Bill being able to beat him in the Super Bowl. Like, just not that team. Like, you want a team that'll catch him on the hop. Like, you want this year's version of Eli Manning riding hot waves of playoff streaks and just nixing them ready. It just could.
Let's see what happens with Mac in the playoffs. We don't know what Mac Jones could be playoff.
Imagine
Mac,
if he just goes through three playoff games and just throws like what 12 passes. Well, let's be realistic. So we'll, less
and they
than
win
50 passes in the three games.
Yeah, but Trent Dilfer did it for the Bucks when they won it on the Gruden.
That's also that wasn't a passing league either then.
Yeah, fair. Look, we've spouted on. The coach is about
He's done. Is he still here? Is he?
He's done. But look, gents, have you seen this? For this week, what have we got?
Bottom feeder.
What did I have for this?
Was it something to do with a Champions League draw?
The Champions League draw. Did you hear that the balls were heated? They actually said that they reckon the balls were heating. That's how they knew which ones were.
United weren't even put in the round, and they should have been. There was no possible way Atletico could have ended up with United because they weren't in the round. They weren't in the pot.
And then they got redrawn with Atletico.
Yeah, good enough for them. Can't wait for Suarez to absolutely make a muck of them.
Jesus, not happy now, is he?
No, he's not.
Heated balls.
That's what they said, is that they reckon the balls are heated.
Give me a break.
He's not happy at all. Right, mate, come on, look, we'll bring you back to the McDonald's. Come on, I'll get you a McFlurry. Right,
close second place was probably the Formula One with the last one race to win a championship.
Yeah, look, I'm going to need someone to explain that to me, how that's a rule. Because it seemed controversial and I know nothing about Formula One. And I was just like, what? This seems
We'll have to get an expert in.
Yeah, but look, I suppose to round us out, it's been enjoyable. That's the last main episode. We'll be back on Thursday/Friday with maybe a bigger Couch Pundit's Guide to the Christmas, maybe. Maybe, I don't know, we'll see. We'll see how we're feeling.
Is there going to be some serious degenerate gambling for Thursday? Like, have you got big bets for Christmas lined up? Coach.
I haven't won a single bet.
It's only been, it's 4-time lucky. But look, I suppose to thank you all for listening over the course of season one. We'll be back in January. There's also another volume of Monsters of the Clubhouse in production. So that'll be in at some stage in January. Sort of plug. But that's all for me.
That's all for me.
I'm going to bring this out from McDonald's now. That's all for me.
Thank you and good night.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.